Good afternoon. We're back with another episode of the Sean Mohoots podcast with esteemed guest, colleague, NBA draft guru, Michael Weisenberg. Mikey, how are you doing today?
Doing very well, Sean. Excited to be back on the Sean Mo Hoops pod. Thank you so much for having me.
We had a extremely long hiatus from the podcast, but figured with the start of the 2023-24 basketball season that it was time to kick it off again and have Mikey V, Oregon Duck, as well as just basketball aficionado on talking really the first few days of the season. Some opening thoughts, some preseason thoughts, even though everybody's now a game in and just looking at the season. So I know we're 3 games in, really the opening night. There was a huge upset with Michigan State JMU, but for the most part, it was a lot of big schools beating up on some smaller schools. And then we did get a pretty good game in a random South Dakota gym last night, or I guess on Wednesday, Tuesday night, in terms of Baylor and Auburn. And that was definitely the, I'd say, the most competitive game in terms of two highly talented teams. So I know we were talking during that, but what were some of your initial thoughts going through that Baylor Auburn game?
Yeah, just really nice to see those two teams play each other right off the bat. Jacoby Walter obviously was the talk of that game. I felt like another freshman from Baylor really stood out there, and that was Yves Missi. And yeah, he was a. They were both actually Hoop Summit guys this past year, an event I've covered for the last decade. And yeah, like with Walter, I always felt like he was like almost criminally underrated in that class. Like, just really good positional size, can score from all three levels, and just has some skill to him as well, and a really solid athlete. So it didn't surprise me how well he did. I guess it like just is pretty crazy that a freshman came there playing against another like Power Five school who looked really solid and like has experience like Auburn, and scored 28 points. And then with Missy, he just had some of those flashes. He is like an 05 born player, who reclassified kind of later in the process. But yeah, he like just really has some vertical pop. One little known fact about Yves Missi is he, during the Hoop Summit practices, there were 3 days in a row where they, like, at the end of everything, they would just let him take like a half court shot. And he made the half court shot 3 days in a row. Like, it was first try, like, really wild. So yeah, like, I like could have been pure luck, but there's some definite talent there. And yeah, he had a solid showing as well. Auburn was up most of the game. Like, yeah, what do you think? Like, just watching that whole thing, it was a really good game. And like, it was nice to see a season opener against like two Power Five teams who look to be making noise in their conference.
Yeah, I think when you watched it, you kept expecting Baylor to be up or Baylor to pull away a little bit. But as you said, Auburn led throughout the first half and throughout the vast majority of the game. But even coming in or coming out of the timeouts, ESPN would usually feature a play that Baylor did. So it continued to feel Auburn was a big underdog, even though I know that the spread was pretty tight. But I think in general, it was great seeing two talented teams playing in kind of a small, compact gym, almost getting ready for, how the Maui Invitational normally was with that gym. But you had, I think the main thing that stood out was the athleticism on both sides of the ball, really across a lot of the positions and some of the plays that were made, not just from the freshmen, but I mean, even on the Baylor side, they're incorporating some transfers. And when you're hopping up from the mid-major level, it can take a while, but they look like they've been playing in Baylor system for a few years, and and Auburn as well. I think Joni Brume was pretty impressive early on, and he kind of tailed off. And I think a guy who made his mark very early, Aiden Holloway, he's going to be a guy that, you know, will get a lot of love throughout SEC play. From a rankings perspective, he definitely climbed towards the end, so he did finish a five-star, but he was playing with Robert Dillingham, probably one of the Kentucky guys I'm most excited to watch play, as well as G.G. Jackson, who could have been starting his college hoops career this week, but is instead somewhat in basketball purgatory on a two-way contract with the Grizzlies, and who knows what's going to come out of him for his career. But I think Aiden Holloway, you know, a little smaller, but a guy that just knows how to get buckets, and he knows how to score. He certainly did that, and he did that at a very efficient mark. So he's going to be fun to watch in the SEC. And I think, you know, going back to probably the last time we chatted in terms of some of the struggles the ACC has had just from a talent perspective, and the SEC starting to increase from more of a overall standpoint. And he's a, you know, CP3 North Carolina guy. If he wasn't going to UNC or Duke, which they didn't really recruit him at all, you would have expected another ACC school to come in there and nab him up. But instead it's Auburn or another SEC school that's getting these kids. And yep. I think that's why you're seeing some of the talent discrepancy across the leagues. But really fun game, and I thought it was, you know, fun watching in Sioux Falls.
Yeah, Aiden was I would say the most consistent player for the world team this past year at Hoop Summit, and really talented scorer, can set his teammates up. He's tiny, but yeah, really tough, very skilled, great touch. Wasn't surprised to see him come in, and like, yeah, I don't think you can keep bringing him off the bench like that. He's I think one of the dudes on your team this year, so yeah, I'm not surprised at all to see him make an immediate impact as well.
Yeah, so that game was on day number two. Day number one, I mean, there was, you know, over 100 or so games. Once again, the ranked teams were hitting the high spreads for the most part. And there wasn't a lot of competition, but you still got to at least see, you know, start to see everybody in action. How are the freshmen looking? How are the transfers looking? How are people meshing together? Oregon had, I don't know if it was the first game, one of the first games for a major Power Five school. They took care of business against Georgia. Nafali Dante put up some big numbers. What were some of the initial takeaways from your Oregon Ducks as they kicked off the season?
Yeah. So if you're talking about a real big time, you know, Power Six, Power Five matchup, Oregon versus Georgia is not what you were probably referring to. But yeah, it was nice. First off, nice to see them play a team that was, you know, from a power conference. Kerry Okendo actually had spent the last 2 years at Georgia, putting up, you know, double digits there. Oregon does have a couple SEC transfer guys also. So, but with Cario and then with Jermaine Cousinard. And so Oregon started who they had to start, with Jesse Zarzuela, transferred from Central Michigan. And then you had Keyshawn Barthelemy, you had Cousinard, and you had the 7-foot duo of Nathan Biddle and Fali Dante. And Georgia took a real long time to get going, and I kind of called them like the island of misfit toys. They have like Jabri Abdur-Rahim from Virginia in the past, and they have somebody, one the guy that transferred from Illinois, I think, frick, I wish I remember his name off the top of my head. And then a couple interesting freshmen, Silas Demary and Blue Kane. And
great, yeah, great name.
So, yes, yeah. Apparently named after the Duke Blue Devils, but is playing for Georgia. And both of the freshmen I thought showed a lot of really solid glimpses. They also have Jalen Deloach from VCU. Mm-hmm. And I think Georgia's still kind of trying to bring everything together. And I bet that freshman backcourt is eventually going to pay off, but just think it needs some time. And Oregon just really killed them inside, which I think is what they're going to have to do this year. Considering, you know, Dante had been kind of injured on and off, and is just kind of getting back into things, was supposed to have a minute limit of 15. He played, I believe, 24, and he had 21 rebounds in those 24 minutes. He had 13 in the first half. Still a really imposing guy. Took a couple mid-range jump shots that I would not advise him to take, but because I feel what is probably best for his NBA stock moving forward is just to, you know, kind of stick to his strengths and kill in the post. And for the most part, I don't feel like NBA teams want their center taking mid-range jump shots unless they're making them at like a really solid rate. Nathan Biddle, I felt, played quite well. Wasn't a great shooting night for him, but he certainly, like, you know, the thing he's always done well is he's always put up some rebound and block numbers that are really solid. You know, is a guy that isn't totally like out of his depth, even moving on switches or anything like that. So like playing him at the four isn't something, you know, like completely out of his wheelhouse, and, you know, can make the occasional outside shot as well. He's somebody that through that, the whole process of his development is kind of, you know, been that guy who is willing to take the three pointers and, you know, somebody that you kind of trust and hope can make that shot. Oregon's backcourt really, really struggled. And their starters, the one guy who played incredibly well for Oregon was Brendan Rigsby, who was a JUCO transfer from Northwest Florida, came in last year after an injury like that, you know, kind of sidelined him for the first part of the season, ended up playing close to 18 minutes per game, but never really got it going. And, you know, he was kind of one of those people that was expected to shot 27.7% from three. Yesterday was really like just playing to his strengths, like, you know, making a few catch and shoot looks, had some nice cuts to the basket, had one play where that was just like a monster dunk on Russell Chua from Georgia, and who was their center. And Brennan's always been one of those guys who's really athletic. And, you know, if he can kind of step into that role and be more, I think he was kind of forced to play on ball at times last year and just was not his strength. And so just hoping he can kind of play to his strengths. And I think one of the major keys to that will be when Jackson Shellstad is healthy. Oregon had two McDonald's All-Americans that were possibly coming in this year. Mookie Cook still hurt. Timeline supposed to be December, but not really sure about that. KJ Evans, certainly going to play minutes and be a rotation guy. I think the team is going to run through Jackson Shellstad. He's just somebody that can create his own shot, can create for others, has like high level speed, even at the college level. Felt like he had really stood out in the practices I watched from Oregon. Really bummed that, you know, he wasn't healthy to start the year, but he's somebody that could, I think, make the difference between this team. Actually, I know that many have predicted that they would be an NCAA team this year, and I think the difference will be, you know, how far they go behind Jackson Shellstad kind of taking the reins.
What are your expectations for Kwame Evans?
I think he's going to, you know, play minutes. He's somebody that is really talented, like, you know, 6'10", can certainly stretch the floor, had a couple really nice moments, but also got pushed around on defense a little bit. And I think it's still kind of working into playing, you know, at the college speed. But he's somebody that I think is going to be really important, especially if like the injury luck of Dante and Nathan Biddle hasn't exactly been pristine. So yeah, KJ is just somebody that I think is going to be quite important and like one of the real role pieces for Oregon this year. And I think he's eventually going to be an NBA player, just with that skill set, with that size. And yeah, like, you know, he certainly, like, he had a really nice kind of leaner and then made a three-pointer. And otherwise, like, I think eventually it's going to come and click for him.
I know. So that really kicked off everything. Michigan State, JMU was the biggest probably talk of the night in terms of the big upset in East Lansing. I know James Madison, football wise, has been getting a lot of publicity. Hasn't really played anybody, but the basketball team certainly played somebody the first night. Really, the biggest win for them in school history. I know they knocked off UVA 2 years ago to open up their new gym, but that wasn't the UVA you know, championship contending type squad versus this one, you know, preseason top five ranking. I think that was proven suspect, as most of the Big Ten rankings usually are, whether that's preseason, during the season, or in the tournament. But, you know, over the years, we can remember Terry Taylor was a small school guy that I loved. This year, it's, you know, Terrence Edwards is the guy. And now it's a little easier to say after he did have the big game, but this goes back to watching JMU early last year when they played UNC, and I think he was 1 for 9, 2 for 10, something like that. Didn't really do much of anything, but you could tell with his size and just how he moved that this guy was talented. And I remember being fairly shocked in the spring that a Power Five school didn't snatch him up or try to get him to upgrade from the Sun Belt. But credit to JMU for keeping him, adding some talent around him. And, you know, I thought he played really well to start, hit some big shots, finished well at the line, played 41 minutes. So I think, you know, he's definitely going to be a name to watch on the mid-major level. And TJ Bickerstaff is another guy, played well in the CAA, upgraded to BC, never really made an impact over 2 years. And, you know, now one of the better games of his career. But you did have a lot of CAA talent in that game, between the old JMU, Bickerstaff coming over, Tyson Walker, obviously a former Northeastern guy. But were you surprised when you saw the score, or what were some of your initial thoughts when you saw that final score come across?
I'm definitely surprised. You know, like I had heard some good things about James Madison, but yeah, like whenever you have a team that's ranked, you know, top five, have a Hall of Fame coach, as you said before, like, you know, bringing back like a majority of that roster from last year, have a really like one of the best athletes coming in as a freshman in Cohen Carr, and a really, like, you know, they have I guess having the freshmen that are going to play wouldn't have been as important if they were relied upon, but like they really weren't. And like you have a lot of your starters and you have like a lot of upperclassmen. So yeah, that did really surprise me. And I also see that both Edwards and Bickerstaff are from Georgia. So yeah, really cool.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that was even in the last minute, you know, I thought Michigan State was going to finally pull away, but JMU came back. So we'll see how they perform. I know they're predicted to finish first in the Sun Belt, but you know, that tournament's always crazy, the Sun Belt, but it'll be interesting to watch both teams as they go forward. And as we mentioned, pretty much all the other top 25 teams were playing the smaller schools, getting into the 90s, 100s, and in some cases, some schools struggled. Other, you know, for the most part, Kansas, Connecticut, et cetera, Duke, they all took care of business early and throughout the game. So we'll touch on one of those schools that put up a ridiculous points per possession in a few minutes, but I'm going to throw out a few schools to get back to the good old buy sell segment that I always enjoy doing and seeing how that turns out at different points in the year. And the first one I'm going to go with is the preseason number one team in the Kansas Jayhawks, who put on a show the first night, as they should, you know, as that number one seed. But are you buying, you know, and I guess as we look at it, they're preseason number one, a lot of people are picking them to win the championship. Are you buying them as a championship favorite / major contender?
I'm buying them as a contender. It's hard for me to know who my favorite is this year, Sean. It's like such a wide open field, but yeah, like they obviously have a lot of experience and some great players. Bring in Hunter Dickinson, obviously, you know, gives them like another really solid big. They have Kevin McCullough, who's, you know, a probable NBA draft prospect this coming year. Just always a lot of depth there. And yeah, so I'm not surprised, because like even last year, like people were pretty in on Kansas. But yeah, and then, you know, they have a few interesting freshmen. Marco Jackson being, I think, you know, one of the top ones and a lot of people's draft sleeper. Not that he was, you know, rated too low in the rankings or anything, but he somebody who might be higher in the draft than he is in the rankings potentially.
All right, so in terms of championship contender, I'm selling the Jayhawks. I think they're going to be a fantastic team as always with the talent. Hunter Dickinson coming in, Bill Self as a coach, the home court advantage. Granted, I was probably selling them last year, and they ran through the regular season. Obviously, they stumbled early facing an athletic Arkansas team. Bill Self wasn't there, so who knows, you know, what could have happened with that team. But look, they have a lot of talent, but I still think losing Jalen Wilson and Grady Dick from a scoring perspective, I think will come to hurt them. It's a lot of talent. Hunter Dickinson playing well, DeJuan Harris on defense, McCullough, Adams, Jackson, Timberlake off the bench. So that, you know, they're going to win a lot of games, but I think they're missing. They're going to be missing some, I'd say, go-to scoring from that wing position, I think, to really be that number one squad. And, you know, if I had to put somebody as the number one team, I'm probably going with, you know, the hated Duke Blue Devils, just in terms of the guys that they do return, Filipowski and Mitchell and Roach, et cetera, Proctor, but then also some of the players that they brought in from a talent perspective. So we don't need to go too much into them now. I'm sure we'll talk.
You don't
about
want to talk about Jordan McCain and Sean Stewart.
we'll get to that in a minute, because that's probably the game of the actual week, which is on Friday at home against Arizona. So we'll come back to that one. But in terms of you know, going to the Big East, I'm going to go Creighton first, and then Villanova in terms of if Mikey V is buying or selling those two squads.
Yeah, I'll buy Creighton. Obviously, I like the fact that they're returning Trey Alexander, Baylor Sharman, Ryan Kalkbrenner is been a guy who, like, you know, seems like he's eventually going to be drafted due to his rim protection and, like, you know, semblance of an offensive game. Would like to see him be a better rebounder, but, you know, we'll see how that goes. They bring in, like, you know, Stephen Ashworth, who is a talented shooter. So, yeah, I'm going to buy Creighton. They put up, like, 105 points also in their first game. Granted, you know, it was against Florida A&M. Who Oregon will soon be playing. And then as far as Villanova, I know they have a couple really interesting transfers. Always been kind of partial to Mark Armstrong and Eric Dixon from back in those USA days. But I am going to sell Villanova. Just not really feeling how things are going there. And just really not sure that they're bringing in the players necessary to be contenders in that conference.
All right, well, let's hit on Creighton first, because I'm, you know, it's probably not a team I wanted to buy. They're a team that made, you know, I think had a very favorable draw, and they did have some talent, put it together late, and usually I feel a lot of those teams get the hype, you know, as you enter the preseason. But I think really looking at them, I think they can, you know, the talent stands up in terms of the hype that they've got. I love Trey Alexander in terms of just that guard that can score from a variety of places on the court. As you mentioned, Shireman, I mean, he gets a lot of love. You have Mason Miller coming in. Kalk Brenner, not a huge fan of, but I mean, he's just such a big body defensively. He has his presence, but, you know, really coming off the bench, Isaac Trout, he was a guy at UVA last year, was part of their larger recruiting class, ended up redshirting. And now he's back home, at Creighton, and he had three threes off the bench yesterday. I think, you know, having him as a bench option is, you know, especially for Creighton, really good. And he's just going to, it'll take him a while once, you know, once they start playing some better teams, I think, for him to still get acclimated. But I think you put a lot of those pieces together. You have the big guy in Kalk Brenner, and you have Trey Alexander as that, you know, just go-to scorer, and then a lot of pieces around them. So, you know, they
a lot of shooting.
Yeah. So they had 18 threes, second in Division I in terms of most threes in the first game. I think High Point was the only school to hit more threes, and they were playing a school I literally had never heard of. So
nice.
So 18 threes, they've got a ton of guys that can shoot. I wouldn't be surprised if they're hitting, you know, 12 plus in a majority of games. And then you go over to Villanova, I think definitely a different style, coming off similar to UNC, I'd say a disappointing season last year. You know, obviously they're getting Justin Moore back, which you know, losing him for most of the year, that's going to hurt. Cam Whitmore, a talented player, maybe didn't fully fit in with a team, new coach, etc. Also, I think even if Jay Wright had been there, that team still would have struggled, because I think they had been, you know, the players that they had been getting, it was just, you know, one in, one out, and they're able to keep competing at a high level. But even before Justin Moore got hurt in that Final Four game, you kind of knew there was going to be a talent drop off last year. And it wasn't Jay Wright that bore the brunt. So I think there is a talent increase. As you mentioned, Eric Dixon, I mean, man, how long was it ago that we were watching Big E go against Isaiah Stewart at the USA developmental camp in Colorado Springs? And look, Isaiah Stewart was easily the better player and playing well in the NBA, but he was such a physical specimen. I remember him being absolutely shocked that he couldn't move Eric Dixon when he tried to put his shoulder into him.
Yeah.
And he was forced to make some moves in the middle of the paint versus right by the basket, and he couldn't do anything with them. So that was my first big E memory. And obviously he's been, you know, now it feels like, you know, playing forever for Villanova, but talented player. And I think what will help them get back to where they want, Justin Moore being healthy. I mean, he's going to be all Big East. And then they maybe haven't done as well recruiting wise yet, but from a transfer portal, they did add some talent. And I think it,
Burden and Bamba.
Yeah, I think it goes back to bringing in like the Villanova ethos in terms of everybody, where maybe it wasn't all there last year. So,
yeah,
you know, are
and
they going to be
hard too? Yeah,
Are they going to be winning the Big East? Might be tough, but I think they're going to be back. They're going to be competing, and you know, I think we're going to be hearing a lot of them in a talented conference this year. So yeah. I'm buying both the Big East squads.
Didn't realize how absurdly old Villanova was.
Yeah. So, you know, probably almost as old as their head coach. I know he's in the late 30s. But all right, last squad. We're staying away from Big Ten teams. I think outside of Purdue, pretty much just sell them all. Purdue, you could losing to the 16 seed, but I think you know that they're going to run through a lot of schools, and we'll touch on them later. But going to your Pac-12, Arizona, in terms of buying or selling, they had the big game coming up at Duke at Cameron next year. This will be at Arizona, which would probably be Duke's first voluntary true non-conference road game in, I don't know, 10, 15 years. We'll have to go back and look at the schedules, but usually they're only playing the mandated road games or up in Madison Square Garden. So the fact that next year they'll be playing at McHale definitely shows a different tone than what Coach K had with his out-of-conference schedule. But this one should be great. But I'll go to you first, getting you some of your Pac-12 Arizona thoughts.
Yeah, I think Arizona is like definitely like the top of the Pac-12 this year. And I don't really think it's too close. Just a lot of guys. They, you know, they have the guards. They brought in somebody you don't know too well, just Caleb Love. and then, yeah, they Jaden Bradley, of course, from Alabama. Colin Boswell was somebody I felt who, you know, kind of stepped up as the year went on and obviously had his growing pains just as somebody who came to college as a 17-year-old off the bat. But yeah, like I think he's going to have a solid season. They got Keshaw Johnson from San Diego State. And then Ballo, like real turnaround last year. And then they bring in Matias Krivas from Lithuania. They have Pele Larson, who was originally with Utah. A lot of dudes. Like, yeah, a lot of dudes. And it seems like depth at pretty much every position right now. Now, I think the shooting might be like a slight question. And you know, obviously with Caleb, it was consistency. And then, you know, Jaden's not necessarily known as a shooter. And Kylan, like, you know, is a good shooter, but not like a great one. But yeah, I think they're the best team in the Pac-12 and should at least compete like on a national scale.
Yeah, I'm buying them. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they go into Cameron and win, even though I just had Duke as my number one. I think they definitely present some matchup problems with Ballo down low. You know, Duke is without Lively. They're kind of saving grace at the paint. So Ryan Young, I'm sure, will try to body him up and get some fouls early, maybe get a charge or two and get Ballo in foul trouble. You know, I think they almost had a 4-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. And I know they've had the first round or the first round slash early exits the past 2 years under Tommy Lloyd. But I think he, you know, he was a grand slam hire. Love how they move the ball offensively. just in terms of, you know, the decision making, how quick, the good shots, pushing the tempo. I think for Caleb Love, it is going to be interesting to see how he fits into that. But I think it's a, you know, thank God he didn't end up at Michigan. I think this is a fantastic situation for him and for his development, you know, because I thought a lot of, look, it, I think it's very easy to criticize him, and I certainly did. I also think he probably shouldered, you know, a lot of, he shouldered blame, but he shouldered maybe more blame than he should have, because he was somebody easy to pick on. And I think when you basically had two guys that were non-shooters last year on the UNC squad, and you're pretty much playing 3-on-5, he was the only one that could really create a shot. So I think, you know, he doesn't have to get back to the sophomore year Caleb, or the tournament run Caleb, but if he can fit in with everybody, you have Jane Bradley, you know, long and athletic, and then you have a lot of the Euro skill guys. And I think that's a pretty interesting mix that will only get better as the season goes, and they will be that dominant team in the Pac-12. So it'll be fun watching that game in Cameron next week. But we'll buy Arizona as well, despite their early exits the past two seasons. So
I think this, like, certainly looks like the most complete team they've had. I guess the year before they were pretty fantastic, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've certainly had some talent. So that's one of the big games Friday. You know, then you go over the weekend. Next week is the Champions Classic. So you have back in Chicago, which will always remind me of the Jabari Parker, Andrew Wiggins, you know, some of those games that went on back in, I remember, 2015, perhaps. But, you know, Chicago, great place to play. Duke, Michigan State, kind of kicking things off. I think Duke will win that one. Michigan State will be.
Let's just predict that Duke will win that one.
Yeah, I think it's usually easy to predict whoever's playing. Michigan State will get the win early on. And then you have Kansas and Kentucky. Kentucky didn't really watch the game, but I do think just with their, you know, they really go as their freshmen go. If the class as a whole is really strong and they're getting the you know, their top 10 5-star guys, that's when they tend to be a little better. If they're getting those guys and the class is a little weaker. I'm not saying that this class is strong, but I think with Wagner, once again, I do love Dillingham just in terms of his shot creation. I think I'm saying people are smaller than what they're listed at. I probably think he's a little bigger than what he's listed at. And then you have Justin Edwards as well. So I think it'll be a fun game. And once again, I think a lot of talent on the floor with some experience with some of the younger talent. I think the experience tends to win out, but it should be a fun one.
Yeah, I would think the experience would win out in this one, just because, like, I they have a lot of the most interesting freshmen coming in this year. Granted, this is a year where, like, the Ignite got a lot of the best players out of high school. You have a lot of really interesting players also playing in the NBL and other places. And then the other thing with Kentucky is, like, I think the two of the most exciting freshmen for them aren't playing right now in Aaron Bradshaw and Zvonimir Ivicic. And I don't know if you, I'm sure you're aware of Ivicic, Sean, because his, like, mixtape was going off everywhere this summer. But he's somebody that I know a lot of college basketball fans would love to see. But yeah, they certainly don't have the depth up front that I think they were hoping for to start the year. And so I think if Hunter Dickinson doesn't take advantage of that, then, I don't know what Kansas is doing.
Yeah, I fully agree with you on the lack of front court depth. Will be interesting to see when/if Bradshaw comes back. You know, Reed Shepard, that's another guy that will probably be around a little bit longer than the Dillingham and Wagners of the world. But You know, I think you know, still will be a fun one to watch. So, you know, as we're kind of just kicking into gear, you know, look, I think there's a lot of talent. You know, one guy that I'm excited to see how he does. Well, I think there's a lot of players to name, but one guy I'll throw out there is Hunter Salas, who's now at Wake Forest, played 2 years at Gonzaga, came off the bench, never really got it going. Wake Forest has done a tremendous job with the past 2 years in terms of the transfer portal guys that they have gotten and in terms of the jump that they've made. So I'm interested to see if Salas can follow that in the system, and really liked his game coming out of school, even though from a shooting perspective, that was a weak spot. I did like how he had grown and jumped and just wasn't able to cut it at Gonzaga, which Gonzaga, I think, will be an interesting team to watch. You know, I see the kind of, you saw it a little bit last year, starting to fade down from that, you know, from that upper echelon that they've been sitting in for a while, still very talented, and still will make a run, but, you know, kind of outside of that championship discussion. But yeah, Hunter Salas is for sure one guy to look at, and then just, you know, interested to see how some of these SEC schools do with Tennessee, Alabama, Arkansas from their talent, Marquette in the Big East, and then Texas in terms of Max Abmas from Oral Roberts. I'm surprised it took him this long to kind of upgrade schools. I know he was loyal after that run they did in the tournament, but I think it'll be fun to watch him at Texas and the Big 12. Not to mention what Houston, you know, does in that conference as well. So really looking forward to the season and some of the games. But what anything that has your eye as we head into week number two?
I'm really excited to see the Champions Classic. Basically, you know, I think I'm a lot like you, Sean, in that I want to see the really good matchups. You know, like I want to see the teams playing those exciting, high-level non-conference games. So, yeah, that's really what I'm waiting for.
Perfect. Well, I know as a lot of the bigger schools were shaking their rust off and doing it, I think we were probably doing the same. But at the same time, it's always fun to talk college basketball, especially, you know, now with just how different each team is every year. And you can pretty much remake your squad. You don't have to rely on your freshman recruiting class. So there was a ton of movement. And I think there's a ton of schools that will be able to dive deeper in and talk more about their players over the next few weeks, because there will be a ton of good games as we head into the Thanksgiving tournaments, where things obviously get going, and then into some of the other non-conference play. But excited for this November, December time period.
Absolutely. And then, yeah, like more so than ever, you know, you look at a team like James Madison, like you were saying, Sean, and like, you know, you're like, oh, like, is this guy an up transfer next year who could possibly, like, you know, decide the NCAA tournament championship? Like, you know, like last year with Miami, with Kansas State, obviously, with UConn, like a lot of those teams had super crucial transfers that, you know, at least even if they're not the ones who are leading you to the NCAA tournament, like they're playing really crucial roles. And I think you see with almost every team, like you need to go seven or eight deep at this point. And of course, having that star power is really important. Like, you know, having those potential NBA guys. But yeah, it's just having depth off the bench and just a lot of solid players and the experience, like that. That's what's really going to drive you, I think, when it comes to March.
Fully agree. So excited to have you back on. It's good catching up with you as we went through the first week, and looking forward to chatting more, especially as we, you know, can talk a little more high school hoops, some NBA draft talk. So we'll be sure to mix that in. But excited to bring the podcast back, hopefully on a more regular basis as we go through the season, and to see how everything shakes out. So thanks, for everybody for tuning in. It's been a while on the podcast, but we'll be revitalizing it. And thanks again for Mikey V coming on and being a great guest as always.
Yeah, just one second. I just wanted to shout out Pro Insight, of course. That is where I'm at. And
and explain what Pro Insight is.
Pro Insight, we're scouting service, and we also do media, cover tons of high school, college basketball events, basically pretty much any up-and-coming player that is going to be doing something in college or has pro potential, we're interested.
Pretty much if somebody commits to a school, you can Google their name and there's going to be a really good interview that Pro Insight has done on that player.
We are trying, Sean. We are trying. So yeah, we if you follow us on social media, _ Pro Insight on X and Instagram, and then perspectiveinsight.com, you'll find our written content, our long form interviews, and definitely check out our YouTube page. We have like breakdowns on tons of players from there. So yeah, just want to shout out to my whole crew there. And yeah, Sean, we never got to even talk about like Border League or anything like that, where I got to see some of the top high school prospects. So would love to talk about obviously the 2024 NBA draft, which is pretty wide open at this point, and it's going to be exciting to kind of track who ends up being the top few guys there, with some early leaders. But 2025, it has its star now, and it's just going to be about everybody else around him. So yeah, it's always great when the draft has a star, Sean. Like I think that's, as you see with like Wembanyama, and then even like the year before, with how well Paolo and Chet have done so far, and Jabari Smith Jr. doing really well in summer league. Yeah, lots of exciting up and comers track.
Well, we'll definitely mix that in next time for sure. In terms of both of those, and I know you have been out on the road covering a lot, and between the 24 and 25 class will be some things to talk about. So we'll start to weave that in next time. But with that, thanks again. This was fun just to get back in the groove of this, and we'll be coming back on a regular basis going forward. So thanks everyone. Have a good one.